Blog Talk Radio.
It's 3 p.m., and I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. We will be talking to those politicians that are working for you and talking about those politicians that are working against you. Just because they're a Democrat, or just because they're a Republican, and you voted that way your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit, and we are going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them. We're going to ask them questions. We're going to let you ask them questions. And we're going to be discussing education system, the military, science, music, sports, oh, and health care. Do you have it? Do you need it? Are your 26-year-olds still on the family health care plan? Or, as the regressive party says, Obamacare. We will bring you what you need to know, because this is the last word. And everything, from the cities, counties, state, nation, the entire world. So sit down and get a pencil, paper, and take this graduate education experience. And we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson.
Unafraid, and dreams were made.
Well, good afternoon. It's Friday. It's 3:10 and 3:11. This is The Last Word, and I'm Michael Lawson. It keeps flying and flying and flying. The S-H-I, you know what, keeps flying. This guy, Donald J. Trump, is a lying bastard. I'm telling you. He lies just because he can lie. You know, and the people who believe him are so far down the damn rabbit hole, they can't do nothing else but go up from there. Can't. They feel that's all they can do is go up because they'll be on the other side of the planet. But the problem is, they're not getting out from this. They're not going to get out. I mean, even Bill Barr is wondering what the hell these people are doing. Did you hear what he said on Fox News? This is Bill Barr now. Mr. Bill Barr. This isn't what he said.
Boost High Protein also has key nutrients for immune support. Boost High Protein.
Some banks give you credit card rewards, but make you jump through hoops to use them. With Discover, you can redeem your rewards for cash in any amount, anytime.
$200 instantly.
What happens?
Where technology and innovation create power beyond belief. Introducing the all-new Ego Power Plus Flow, reaching an...
Over 40,000 people are working on safety and security.
I don't know what the deal is here, but it's coming. I don't know why we got commercials here.
For them to have taken things to the current point, they probably have pretty good evidence, but that's speculation.
Ego Power Plus Flow, reaching an incredible 765 CFM. It's more powerful than gas, and at speeds of up to 200 miles per hour, it's the industry's most powerful
right,
flow. Featuring Ego's patented lithium battery technology, it runs up to 90 minutes on a single charge. That's why Ego is the number one rated brand in cordless outdoor power, exclusively at Lowe's, Ace, and Ego-authorized dealers.
Facebook is taking action to keep its platform safe. Over 40,000...
I'm going to hear Bill Barr speak on Fox News. And, I thought it was kind of long, because it was just a minute.
That's nearly 60 times the population of Washington, D.C. In the last few months, Facebook took action on more than 8 million pieces of bullying.
Hey, this man deserves it. Why did he have stuff?
As we were talking about a little bit earlier, former Attorney General Bill Barr was on Fox News talking about the DOJ search of Mar-a-Lago, and it seems like he believes the Justice Department was more than justified. Listen.
I personally think for them to have taken things to the current point, they probably have pretty good evidence, but that's speculation. I think the driver on this from the beginning was you know, loads of classified information sitting in Mar-a-Lago. People say this was unprecedented. Well, it's also unprecedented for a president to take all this classified information and put them in a country club, okay? And how long is the government going to try to get that back? You know, they jawboned for a year. They were deceived on the voluntary actions taken. They then went and got a subpoena. They were deceived on that, they feel. And the record, the facts are starting to show that they were being jerked around. And so how long, you know, how long do they wait?
And this is Attorney General Bill Barr.
That was Attorney General Bill Barr. But, you know, what are you going to do when someone believes that they are the king? What are you going to do when someone believes that? What do you do when someone believes that, hey, you can't tell me what to do because I'm God?
The question is, do I have a God complex?
Dr. Kessler says yes.
which makes me wonder if this lawyer has any idea as to the kind of grades one has to receive in college to be accepted at a top medical school. If you have the vaguest clue as to how talented someone has to be to lead a surgical team. I have an MD from Harvard. I am board certified in cardiothoracic medicine and trauma surgery. I have been awarded citations from 7 different medical boards in New England, and I am never, ever sick at sea. So I ask you, when someone goes into that chapel and they fall on their knees and they pray to God that their wife doesn't miscarry, or that their daughter doesn't bleed to death, or that their mother doesn't suffer acute neural trauma from post-operative shock, who do you think they're praying to? Now, you go ahead and read your Bible, Dennis, and you go to your church, and with any luck you might win the annual raffle, but if you're looking for God, he was in operating room number 2 on November 17th, and he doesn't like to be second-guessed. You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
And this is what Mr. DJD Drump says every single day when he gets up and looks at himself in the mirror. You know he's got mirrors on the ceiling, mirrors all over the wall, so he can always see himself. You wouldn't doubt that, would you? The man wants to see himself 24-7. He wants to see himself doing everything, getting dressed, taking a bath, blowing his nose. He wants to see himself. And he wants other people to see him, say, gee, you're great. He loves that. But see, God isn't really like that. God doesn't have to look at himself. God doesn't have to see himself in the morning or in the afternoons or in the evenings doing anything. Because God is good and God is great. And he doesn't need anybody to tell him that. Because that's not important. What this clown needs is someone to tell him that, to reassure him of that, because he knows he's not. That's the only time you have to have someone tell you constantly that you've done a great job, that you're great. That's the only time. That's the only time you need someone to do that. Because other than that, you know you are good. You know you are good. So, we have something here that I wanted to hear. I don't know what it is. And let me just play a snippet. Oh, that's too loud.
Michael Cohen, and you're listening to the Mea Culpa podcast. Since the FBI search and seizure of stolen classified documents from Donald Trump's Florida country club, Mar-a-Lardo, it's been near impossible to keep up with the daily barrage of facts and opinions surrounding the unprecedented case. Who would have imagined that a former president would become perhaps the biggest threat to national security in the history of the republic? Trump snatched literally hundreds of sensitive documents on his way out of the White House. Documents that did not belong to him, many of them marked top secret. And then he held them hostage despite the best efforts of the National Archives to retrieve them. Trump lied, connived, and ignored a subpoena. He gave back some documents, but not all of them. And the standoff continued. Finally, the FBI swooped in. No former president had ever been shaken down by the FBI before. And what the search revealed has shocked the world. Last week, a highly redacted 38-page affidavit provided enough damning evidence against Trump to warrant an indictment. So here to break down the various ramifications of the crime that may finally bring the Mandarin Mussolini down is legal expert Frank Figluzzi, a former assistant director for counterintelligence at the FBI, where he served 25 years as a special agent and directed all espionage investigations across the entire government. Figluzzi has said, "There's not much that astonishes me, but reading the classification markings referred to in this affidavit made the hair on my back of my neck stand up." Today in this special episode of Mea Culpa, Figluzzi will share with you his razor-sharp insights and unparalleled understanding of the case. I guarantee you'll feel smarter after listening to the interview. Figluzzi, a national security contributor and regular columnist for NBC News and MSNBC, is also the author of the national bestseller, The FBI Way, Inside the Bureau's Code of Excellence. And check out his most recent op-ed on the MSNBC opinion page, entitled, "There's a Reason Why Hoarding Classified Documents is a Crime." So let's go now to that conversation. Okay, so Frank, regarding Mar-a-Lago, the GOP is screaming that there's never been a warrant issued for a court-authorized search of a former president's residence or offices. But look, let's be honest. Trump isn't just any president or any former president. And after a year and a half of stalling and bullshitting and not returning the documents when requested to the National Archives, what choice did the DOJ have? Now, they knew Trump would make a spectacle out of it, but nevertheless, they went ahead anyway. What do you think that the logic was behind the search? And why now? Was surveillance footage the tip-off? What do you think is what caused it?
So I think you set the stage for what could be an hour-long discussion, because there's sub-questions in your question. Look, first, for those on the far right who deliberately choose to ignore facts and say that, you know, this is unprecedented, yes, it is. And what's also unprecedented, as you referred to, is that we've had a president of the United States who posed a national security threat. So number one, I don't want to hear about unprecedented. They put an unprecedented individual inside the Oval Office. Number two, for those who are claiming that the search warrant itself was an overstep, an overreach, a highly invasive measure, I just ask them to come back to the facts. Even there are even mainstream reporters who are just either not understanding the fact pattern and chronology of what went on here to get to the search warrant, or they're choosing to do it deliberately. And then, you know, speaking of not in the mainstream, a guy by the name of Alan Dershowitz put a column out in the last 24 hours, I think it's on the Hill, that says, they jumped right to a search warrant and they should have used a subpoena. Look, are you kidding me? Did you, Alan, have you missed the part about the subpoena? Have you missed the part about the physical visit by government officials, high ranking, to Mar-a-Lago? Have you missed the part about months and months of negotiation? Did you miss the part about how this started even during Trump's transition? He's still in the White House, and Pat Cipollone is telling the National Archives there are boxes in the residence of the White House that do have to go back to you. People are conveniently forgetting all of this. So, look, when the far right, particularly lawmakers, start to scream about this, it's apparent, Michael, that this is actually a strategy, that they actually welcome this as kind of a desperate solution to garnering donations and votes by saying, once again, Trump is a victim and the big bad government is out to get him. So you get to a search warrant here after extreme deference when all other measures have failed. And if you read through the affidavit, as redacted as it is, it still speaks to the measures and timing involved before they took the ultimate step of a search warrant signed by a federal magistrate, because the probable cause was there.
Right. what bothers me the most is, let me start with the first thing that bothers me. And I don't understand why people are making such a big deal over it. First and foremost, Mar-a-Lago is not his private home. It's not his residence. It is a social club. It's a social club that has hundreds of members with thousands of people coming in and out each and every week. And I believe that that was one of the reasons that this measure needed to be taken. Let's not forget, it wasn't that long ago that that Chinese woman, Zhang, came in. She had a thumb drive with malware. The locations of the search by the FBI agents is spelled out quite nicely in this redacted document, but it does spell out where it was. First of all, Trump's office is above the catering facility, which is an open area. Anybody can just go upstairs into the, you know, it's not as if he has a guard that's posted there or there's a lock. You go upstairs. That's how you get to his office. And directly next to that office is a couple of suites for members or guests of members who are staying, whether it's bridal parties and so on. So there was unfettered access to the area that you had classified information, not to mention a staff of people that would come to clean, whether it's his office, his room, or what have you. Talk about, like, Rudy the moron, Colludi Giuliani, right? That he was safeguarding these documents. First of all, nobody asked him to do it. He just did it on his own. And I said on Ali Velshi on MSNBC, and I said also on Ari Melber, I turned around and I even said it on with Allison Kamrat on CNN. I believe that Trump had nefarious reasons for taking the documents and not wanting to give them back. But the part that I was most fascinated by that was completely unredacted is the entire paragraph of this affidavit, paragraph number 47. And this is where I have issue with the GOP, and especially the far right. It would be one thing if the FBI took another dozen boxes and there was nothing in it other than love notes to Putin and Kim Jong-un and Mohammed bin Salman and some personal artifacts that could or might not be belonging to the former president. But here we find out that there were 184 unique documents bearing classification. 67 of the 184 were marked as confidential. 92 of those documents marked as secret and 25 documents as top secret. The notion that Donald Trump should be in possession when he is not the president of the United States with 184 unique documents is mind-blowing, and how they're twisting it and how they're fundraising off of it, I cannot fathom.
So you've raised a good point that's worth saying, and I'm glad you did, which is, look, I also share your deep concern that there was likely a nefarious intent in maintaining these documents, particularly after he's told, hey, you got to give these back. But I'm very quick to point out, it's enough for me, again, 25 years in the FBI, heading up counterintelligence investigations, it's enough for me to get to the warrant because of the simple need to get those goddamn documents back and into a safer place. So people who say, well, this better be, boy, they better have something. Boy, he better have been ready to transmit to a foreign power. I say, no, look, wait a minute. We have now, and we now know, and you mentioned the number of documents, by the way, is only pre-search. We don't, God knows how much more. Really, how many pages, how serious that search was, the search return was. But it's enough to get in there after all of the failed attempts, a subpoena, et cetera, physical visits. It's enough to do the warrant just to get those sensitive documents out of his hands. So I don't really, you know, yes, we got to dig in and get to the motive and who had access and do the damage assessment. But it's enough to just get the goddamn documents back. And I've got to tell you, as a counterintelligence professional, when I read the unredacted, the redacted unsealed version, and I saw the classification markings, and I'm referring to HCS, Human Sources, mm-hmm. SI, Signals Intelligence, or con, originator controlled, no foreign, not for foreign nationals. My God, it's amongst the most sensitive markings you can put on a U.S. government document.
Well, how about on June 8th of 2022, and this is all in paragraph 61, another that is, for the most part, unredacted, DOJ counsel sent to POTUS's counsel a letter basically reiterating what they've already told him a year prior to, that the premises are not authorized to store classified information, right? I mean, instead, again, what do you get? You get the Rudy Colludis turning around and saying, we put an extra padlock. It's down in the basement. Nobody goes there, et cetera, et cetera. This is not normal behavior from a person. And one of the things that I said he is going to use, and it's my you know, my belief, that Donald would use that information to blackmail this country to leave him alone if, in fact, an indictment or potential incarceration was forthcoming. I don't believe he gave himself a pocket pardon. I don't. I believe that he thinks that he has these documents that if, in fact, you think you're going to put me away, no problem. I have dozens of supporters that have copies, and the second that you do this, I'm going to tell, they're going to obviously see it because it'll be on television. They are instructed to send this to Russia, to China, to North Korea, to Iran, to all of our adversaries. And for all you know, the stuff that's marked top secret, and you and I will never know what that document is ever, right? It could be locations of our nuclear silos. It could be, who knows, like idiot, his son, the idiot Eric Trump, takes a photograph of himself on Instagram that has the Wi-Fi password right then and there for Mar-a-Lago. Who knows what, you know, what those documents are? And that's a real problem.
You know, you use the word blackmail, and we shouldn't take that lightly. Essentially, we have a former president holding hostage U.S. government sensitive information. He is. And this is something I've seen throughout my career, Michael, because in a sense, this kind of blackmail or gray mail, as prosecutors will call it, happens in the most sensitive of espionage cases. By that, I mean, there are cases, and I've had them in my career, where the information taken is so incredibly sensitive that it can't ever see the light of day in a courtroom. And so there have been cases where certain three-letter agencies say, hey, congratulations, FBI, for catching the guy who did this and took it, but, comma, we cannot support a prosecution because I don't care what steps are taken to give clearances to the judge and to the defense counsel. This can't ever be a matter of record. And so, you know, it's not outside the realm of possibility that he does what other espionage subjects have done, which is go ahead, let's go to trial. Because in those cases I'm referring to, the DOJ will often offer a plea deal, right? And cross their fingers, please God, let him take the plea deal so we don't have to go to trial. And of course they go, no, I'm going to trial. Let's go. And the case is dropped. Now, there's good news here because there's so many classified documents that DOJ could pick and choose the documents that could get cleared for use in court. But often you don't have that luxury. You have like a guy took one top secret document and you can't prosecute him.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this then. What can you tell us about the memorandum that was filed with the affidavit? What does it tell us that the affidavit doesn't?
Well, can I? Are you referring to the letter that Trump's attorney filed as to and insisted as Brady material that it be included in the affidavit?
Yes.
All right. So I want to talk about this because Trump's legal team filed a letter and insisted, please include this when you get to the judge if you're going for a search warrant, because he's got to know what our position is. And this is fascinating. There's two positions in the letter. One is position number one, hey, the president can do whatever the hell he wants when it comes to classified information, because he can declassify anything. And, of course, that's not true. The president has broad declassifying authority, but he's got to go through a process. Michael, in the FBI, as an assistant director for CI, I was an original classifying and declassifying authority. There's a process to it, and you've got to cite a reason, and then the documents reflect a declassification marking and who declassified it. And in my case, it would have been my credential numbers on the document. Okay, so that's nonsense, but I love, position number one, Trump can do whatever he wants. Position number two is even more fascinating. Hey, look at the statutes you're citing for unlawful retention. And they start with the phrase, whoever is an officer, employee, or contractor of the U.S. government and takes and retains classified information. So they go on to go, hey, our guy, our client, he was never an employee or officer of the U.S. government. Never a government employee. Didn't work for you. Holy cow. Really? What was he? Did he work for Walmart? Because they're saying Trump was never an employee or officer of the United States government. It's an unbelievable assertion, but it tells you volumes about who Trump thought he was working for, which was himself.
Well, absolutely. But then again, let's not forget that Trump doesn't give a shit about process. Process it's a word that doesn't apply to him. I mean, let's just go back and think for 2 seconds about the process of the pardons when Jared decided to take over the secretary of everything and the doer of nothing, but somehow or another he managed to avoid the entire pardon office and basically flew right over that process and handed out pardons to people for whatever the reason may be, right? Money, influence, who really knows? But my biggest fear is that what they would put, and I'm talking about Trump's counsel, because I find them to be beyond stupid. I think that they are the bottom of the barrel when it comes to choosing anyone. I mean, just look at the team that he has. I'm shocked that they didn't turn around and make the argument that Trump's not the one who took the documents out of the White House, that this was done by other people, because Trump is such a fat fuck that he can't lift the goddamn box, and it was then done by other people,
right.
Nor does he have the mental stamina to actually go through documents to put him in a box. I wouldn't be shocked, and I'm not joking now. I wouldn't be shocked if he turns around, blames it on somebody else, and saying they're the ones that took it.
So no, listen. Another great talking point here is the motion that they filed with. By the way, they filed this motion for a special master up in Fort Pierce, Florida, which, by the way, is like a planet away from Palm Beach and Miami. It's the farthest north you can be, Michael, and still be in the Southern District of Florida, right? And they were judge shopping, but that's another point. And it backfired on them because the judge, Judge Cannon, who I believe was appointed by Trump, she went, look, this is making no sense to me. I don't even know why you filed with me. What the hell? Can you please refile and explain? And they did. But in that motion, you raise a good point here, because you would have expected, I would have expected, that one of the defenses would be, I didn't do it. The movers did it. Some clerk did it. I didn't even know they were here. And by not asserting that defense early on, they have painted themselves into a corner. He's had to come out, right? He's had to say everything but that. I declassified them. They're mine. I was cooperating. They have missed the opportunity of perhaps the greatest defense, which would be, I had no idea. And the thing is, by asserting, as they do in this motion, Michael, for a special master, that these may contain executive privileged documents, they have given up an argument that they might contain attorney-client privilege. They boxed themselves in a corner with executive privilege because the irony of that defense is, oh, they're executive privilege documents? Really? By very definition, executive privilege documents belong to the executive.
Exactly.
And you're not him. You're not him. And so, and by the way, the executive branch is asking for the documents. So it's a losing argument. And it gets back to your point, horrible, ineffective assistance of counsel.
Yep. So let me ask you this then, Frank. Obviously, someone had to have alerted the DOJ that they would, have found probable cause, for obstruction if they had searched Mar-a-Lago. I have my ideas about who that person might be. You have any particular, suspects here? I mean, this is what you did for a living. I just have my conjecture. But who do you think it was?
So look, we have to use the plural here, because clearly all the documents we've seen so far, Michael, refer to plural witnesses, multiple witnesses. And even, the judge says, boy, the government's made a great argument about protecting multiple civilian, is the term used, multiple civilian witnesses. So it's not just one person. Now, we've had some clue in reporting in the media that Pat Cipollone, still in the White House at the time, was telling the National Archives, yeah, we got classified in the residence, and you got to take this back. So suspect number one, Cipollone. But I don't know. There's a cast of thousands down there, as you just said. What are your thoughts?
So here are my thoughts, and again, I've been very vocal about it, and again, I'm going to preface this by saying it's my conjecture. I am not like you. I am not a seasoned FBI agent. But reality, eventually sits on all of our doorstep. Who knows whether or not Frank Figluzzi has a safe in his home? Well, clearly it would be your significant other, your children, people that live with you, right? So let's just use Donald here. Who would know that Donald had a safe in Mar-a-Lago? Well, Jared, Ivanka, Don Jr., Eric, Melania, maybe not. So my theory is, who's the one that seems to be escaping all of the nonsense that's going around, yet was known as the secretary of everything, had his hands in every dirty deed that went on during the administration, has managed to benefit to the tune of over $2.5 billion from the Saudi? My theory is that it's Jared. Now, when I saw that it said multiple people and that they are civilians, well, now just add Ivanka, so we have Javanka, because they are freaking frack when it comes to everything. People say to me, oh, come on, stop it. Ivanka wouldn't do that to her father. And I say, bullshit. Right? There's no doubt in my mind. Right now they are doing and they are getting everything that they wanted. And that's a ton of money. I mean, he's pulling down $50 million a year in just fees off of, the Saudi investment money.
Yeah.
They're building themselves a $100 million house down there in Florida. That's all that they care about. It's money, power, and influence. So do I believe that they knew that these documents were there? I believe that Cipollone was the impetus for getting both Jared and Ivanka to testify. And during that time period, and they testified, they didn't take, from what I read, they didn't take the fifth 1,000 times like other people did. For all you know, they said, yeah, I know my dad has classified information at Mar-a-Lago in his office and in the safe and shit like that. Then they probably asked, Jared the same question. And he said, yeah, Ivanka was right, and Cipollone had his concerns. That's what I believe.
So you may not have 25 years in the FBI, but you have almost singular insights into the workings of this bizarre family. And I don't. And so I can't sit here and even imagine that, a couple of kids would do in dad, but you can't. You know them. I will note that what you just said sounds like a lot like a season of the HBO series Succession, where the kids are just doing each other in to succeed dad. Unbelievable. But it is counterintuitive. I mean, Jared, yes, indeed, Jared was a beneficiary, no question. You know, remember the battle that went on over his clearance at the White House and whether he should get TS, top secret, or not.
Which, by the way, he never got until Trump turned around and said, I'm giving it to him.
Yeah, yeah. And why? Why? I mean, really, the difference, as I try to tell people, the difference between TS, top secret, and secret is really, I mean, you could sit there. I would sit on at my desk and I'd see a secret version of a document and I'd see the TS version of the very same document. And the TS version simply is because it contains references to how they got it, the source and the method.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
right.
So why would Jared need to see the source and the method? And yes, he, to the tune of millions and billions, he's likely benefited from access to that in his personal business. So it's somewhat counterintuitive to think that he would then turn around and cooperate with the FBI and go, yeah, I have a ton of money in my bank account now, but I'd like to tell you that my dad has all this stuff that I may have benefited from. It's interesting. I tend to lean more toward, by the way, I'm not discounting that at all, but since we're talking about multiple witnesses, I also have to consider the formers. Mark Meadows has been deathly quiet, right? People who have been down to Mar-a-Lago, someone I'm sure in media is working on a list of people who visited and made their pilgrimage to the Mar-a-Lago Mecca right after January, right, to pay homage and stay in good graces. And that's everybody from McCarthy, Meadows, you name them.
But Frank, they would never know. Donald is not open about that. So even with Mark Meadows, his chief of staff, who's getting a beating in the eyes of the public because of his servitude, you know, to Donald, he would not know about the safe. Donald would not tell him about it, nor would Donald ever tell him about what was in it, simply because they could use that over him. See, Donald has a very small, you know, you remember that whole circle of trust with Robert De Niro in the movie Meet the Fockers? It's the same thing. There were maybe a handful of people that would have known this, right? And that includes his kids. Like I said, my opinion.
Well, it's more than an opinion because it's informed by your insights. So that's interesting because I view Trump as somebody, it's the trust thing, right, is important. But I view him as someone who has a track record of exposing classified publicly even. Remember the infamous tweet of a satellite photo of an Iranian nuke facility that blew up, right? He tweets it.
When he gave that document to the Russians, in the Oval Office?
Which came from a foreign intelligence service, by the way, right?
From Israel.
And it's not his to give, right? So my point is, he loves showing stuff around. And so is there anybody that you can think of, non-family, who would have made a pilgrimage down there and he would have said, hey, you got to see this. You're not going to believe this.
No. So
wow.
Let me then, no, and I believe that the kids, especially Jared, knows that Donald would throw his ass under a bus in under a second to save himself. And you know what? This is, how could you expect me not to, Donald? Because if the shoe was on the other foot, it would be my ass getting rolled over, you know, by the Donald bus. Guaranteed. So I'm protecting myself, your daughter, and your grandkids. I mean, that's how Jared's probably rationalizing this.
How about rank and file staff at Mar-a-Lago? Here's why I say this. Remember the subpoena, one of the subpoenas, there were two at least, was for the surveillance camera video of the hallway in front of the storage room. And reportedly, that really alarmed DOJ because when they got it, they saw, quote-unquote, boxes and containers being moved, containing documents and containers being changed. Is it possible he gave an order to staff? Hey, we got some issues. Start moving these boxes out. And they laid eyes on classified markings.
Listen, that's always a possibility, but I doubt it. You know, Trump is not that forward-thinking. you know, the only thing that the staff would do is they would move the boxes from here to there. And it would probably be under the supervision of somebody like a Jared. Like, he wouldn't trust Don Jr. because, as he used to say to me, Don is the worst fucking judgment of anyone that I've known. Plus, Don is also shady as his father. Don would probably open the boxes, even if they were scotch tape closed, to see what's in them and possibly take something for himself. But then let me ask you this next question. When there's a compromise of the sort that took place at Mar-a-Lago, there's something called damage assessment, correct?
Yes.
What does that exactly entail? And how can we now protect our government's methods and sources if, you know, if this stuff is just floating around out there? Because we really have no idea, not just, we don't have an idea, not just people who have seen it, but we don't know whether or not photos have been, you know, taken of it. We don't know whether these are the only, you know, additional 12 boxes. Maybe he has them somewhere else. Maybe he has them, you know, in one of his other properties where he stores shit, like up at Seven Springs or somewhere.
So, look, the short cavalier answer to what is a damage assessment right now is it's a nightmare in this case because of the volume of documents recovered. We just made reference to 184 before the search, and now we know from the search return document that there are 11 more sets of classified. We don't know how many pages that is, but let's assume we're up around 200 classified documents, and now you're assigned to the task of the damage assessment. Okay, so first thing you got to do, I mean, they're going to be lifting fingerprints. They're going to try to get latent fingerprints off these documents in terms of who touched them, not just for criminal prosecution, but for the damage assessment, right? If a fingerprint belongs to, I don't know, Ahmed on the staff, and he's a foreign national, you know, all of that has to be figured out. Then you go back to the agencies, and boy, there's going to be some sobering discussions at CIA and NSA with FBI agents because they're going to go back to the agencies that originated some of these documents. Again, we saw H and SI markings on documents. Those belong to CIA or NSA. And they're going to have to lock themselves in a skiff, and they're going to say, I have some bad news for you, my friend. Your documents were found at Mar-a-Lago. Please tell us where the damage. Yeah, please tell us the damage. Tell us whether you need to exfiltrate this human source somewhere in the world that is working for Team America and is now going to get killed as someone, you know, what's the worst case scenario if this guy exposed? That's what you do in the damage, worst case scenario, who had access and when, and you got to look at the markings. You also look at page numbers, and I think this played a role. This is conjecture, but I think the National Archives and the DOJ started looking at the documents they got, Michael, and they started looking because they're very carefully marked at this level of classification. And they went, oh my God, there's three pages missing in this document, right? What the hell? And where's page 37? And that's part of establishing, okay, what was on page 37? What was that? And they got to go back and find the, you know, oh, the original. It, all of that, who, what, when, damage. And you almost have to assume a worst-case scenario. I won't give you the name of the case, but there's one of the most damaging spies in U.S. history inside the U.S. intelligence community, worked for the Russians. When he was approached and debriefed as to, you know, what the hell did you do over the years, he's pretty much said, if I touched it, you should consider it gone. If I touched it, you should consider it gone. And wow. And that really kind of governs the mindset of a damage assessment is how bad is this worst case scenario?
Wow. Wow. So, look, let me then ask you the following. Merrick Garland is trying to restore the reputation of the Justice Department after Trump and Bill Barr, in my opinion, you know, just absolutely fucking destroyed it. Mm-hmm. How do you think that he's doing so far? I mean, has he played this Mar-a-Lago search and seizure correctly? Or you think there was something that he might have done differently or better?
Yeah, my God, this guy is between a rock and a hard place because the answer to your question is literally, it depends who in our society you're asking, right? I can sit here and tell you that I think he's played it pretty well. And, you know, I also will sit here and tell you that I'm a big advocate. I even say this in a chapter of my book, The FBI Way. There's a whole chapter called Consistency. And what I advocate is, when you're under the most stress, in the most unprecedented circumstances, stick to protocol and practice. Don't think that if we've never seen this before, we have to somehow respond differently because you're going to get into trouble. So that was my approach to Merrick Garland, saying, okay, you've got an unprecedented search of a former president, but don't do anything different. Don't start talking and calling press conferences because they're going to call you out for it. But I got to tell you, he did come out publicly, and I think it was the right move. I think he had to. I think he had to explain. I don't think we're going to hear from him anymore. But, you know, with regard to the polarization in our society, look, you could go down the street and talk to some guy who's going to tell you he's the devil, Merrick Garland's the devil, the FBI is evil, and it's the end of the world, and it's all political. So, look, it depends. But I think he's done the right thing. I think if there's any criticism I have, National Archives spent way too long playing a game, way too long playing a deferential game and putting trust in Trump, and you know what happens when you do that. DOJ moved a little faster once they got handed the case. But that's the only criticism I have so far.
You know, one of the biggest problems, and I talk about it a lot, is that Trump is a master manipulator. He's a master spinner. I mean, you're still seeing 53% of the Republican Party right now are behind Donald and believing that this Mar-a-Lago, listen, that's not me saying it. That's a, I believe, a Reuters Ipsos poll that came out. 53% of the Republican Party believe that Merrick Garland, the DOJ, the FBI, that they should not have done what they did. And what does Donald do off of it? He fundraises, and so do the rest of these sycophantic acolytes that are around him. But let me tell you why Donald is doing it. It's more than, it's not just only about the money. The money's a big part of it for him. What he knows is that innately, the American people don't trust government. We just don't. You know, if you ask 9 out of 10 people on the street, you know, do you think our politicians are corrupt? I wouldn't be shocked if 9 out of 10 turn around and say, yeah, absolutely. Is the FBI corrupt? Is the DOJ corrupt? Absolutely. You'll find the same comments. Why? Well, look, I'm a former lawyer, right? Obviously now disbarred because of Trump. And, you know, my participation in what? In the campaign finance violation. We've watched as they've allowed that to gloss over. So instead, on the unconstitutional remand against me, we file FOIA requests. What does DOJ come back with? Right off the rip, there's no documents. I have this in my new book, Revenge, How Donald Trump Weaponized the U.S. Department of Justice Against Their Critics. They come back and they say, by letter, there are no search results that meet your FOIA request. So I turn it over to this lawyer. His name is Mark Zaid. Everybody knows Mark, right? I was speaking the other day with Norm Eisen. He uses him as well. Everyone in this field uses him in order to get FOIA documents. And so I said to him, it's impossible. I already have 4 documents that I know exist. I have them in my possession. Let me shoot them over to you, which I do, and then he files an action. You know how many documents? You know how many documents ended up meeting the criteria after we established the fact that they were lying? Lying. This fucking governmental agency that my tax dollars goes to support lied and said there was zero over 450,000 documents.
So let's get this right for the listeners here. You're saying that the scope that you let's recap on what exactly you were asking them to provide, right? It has to do with the remand, and you might want to spell that out. But then they came back and said zero. We got nothing. And then they came back with over 400,000 documents that they're saying they found. About what? Explain that.
About the unconstitutional remand back to prison. So, for example, There's a guy, his name is Adam Pakula. He's like the lowest level guy there at Department of Corrections. He didn't make the decision to remand me. He spoke to a guy, his supervisor was in the room, Enid Phoebus. She's now retired and down in Florida, which is perfect for her because I think she's a MAGA. Then they speak to a guy named Patrick McFarland, who's a residential reentry manager over at like MDC in Brooklyn. But he then was speaking to somebody else who was with the Eastern Regional Division, who then spoke up and up and up. And my supposition is that this all came from Bill Barr. Because the document that they prepared, that they gave to me, this two-page document, does not have a federal ID number attached to it. As you know, all federal documents have a classification, a document number attached to it. It did not. It was written specifically for me. So my point is, now they're telling me, we can't even give you this close to 500,000 documents. Can you limit your search? And so Mark Zaid contacts me, and we agree that we're not going to ask for the 302s. They notoriously don't give it to you if you plead guilty, which, you know, they got me to plead guilty by threatening to indict and to incarcerate my wife over Trump's, you know, relationship with Stormy Daniels and the payment. Suffice it to say, right, they'll only give us 500 documents a month. And they were supposed to turn them over by August 22nd. Instead, on August 22nd, they send out a letter that turns around and says, well, there are other government agencies involved with methods and process. We need to send it to them in order to see what they want to redact. So despite the fact they had 8 months so far to get us the first 500 documents, even after the change and the reduction of the scope, there's 47,000 documents. It's going to take me more than 9 years to get my documents. You remember Ray Donovan, the Secretary of Labor from the Ronald Reagan administration? What does a person need to do to get their reputation back? That's why I'm going after these documents, because rest assured, you know what else is in these documents? Additional conversations, like the prosecutors, the Southern District of New York, when they suspected, and then actually I don't believe it's suspected, I believe that they knew that Alan Weisselberg, the Trump CFO that recently, you know, is going to be pleading guilty, to either it's going to be 5 months or possibly 15 years unless he testifies in the upcoming case against the Trump org, that he lied to the Southern District. They still use that lie to go after me before a grand jury. So there's a whole smorgasbord of bullshit that's going on here, which I outline in this book, Revenge, with real specificity, because this is what Trump is doing. He's using, for example, what happened to me in order to make the rest of, you know, his followers or people who don't believe government is legitimate, he's making them believe that, well, based upon, look what they did to Cohen, and I don't even like him. I actually can't stand him. But look what they did to him. They railroaded him in order to go after me. This is the circular thinking of Donald Trump. And that's why I ask you the question, whether or not Merrick Garland is doing a good job, and he needs to do a great job after Bill Barr shitted it all up, in order to fix the reputation. Because if we don't trust our government, what else do we have?
Well, okay, so yes, I thought your question was specific to how he's handled the Mar-a-Lago search and January 6th writ large, and I think he's done an excellent job. I think you're talking about systemic institutional issues, and also, by the way, the possibility that there are still Trump MAGA true believers penetrated into our institutions. I'm convinced that there are, even though we keep hearing the mantra of deep state, I think it more likely refers to remnants of Trump. But I will say a couple things. I'm both surprised and not surprised by the story you just told regarding the FOIA request for your own remand data. That, for those who, you've got a savvy audience, but for those who don't understand what a remand is, this is Michael trying to figure out how and who in God's name he got out of prison and then ended up getting put back in. Do I have that right?
You have it right, yeah.
Yeah, okay, and so now it's been narrowed down from about 500,000 documents to 47,000 documents. What I'm not surprised about is the approach that's been taken with your request. You don't feel singled out here because I've seen it before. I've seen the, oh, really, you want all the documents in your case? They call your bluff. Yeah, there's a gazillion. And where would you like the truck delivered over the course of the next 10 years?
I'll take it.
I've seen that. Or, you know, you mentioned that they're lying. And this, by the way, this often happens at a low staffing level of some poor employee who has to handle FOIA requests, right? And they go, they have blinders on. So, okay, Cohen is requesting something, $500,000. Well, no, Cohen's requesting, the scope of what he's asking for is related to his remand, not the whole god darn criminal investigation of Cohen. And so suddenly you see requests to narrow the scope. I've seen this 100 times, if not 1,000. But what is surprising to me is that, my God, there's nearly $500,000 documents that they came back with.
Zero to $500,000. Right.
Yeah, and I mean, that is, I have to tell you, in a case like yours, and if it's truly just the remand, that's a staggering amount of documents. I don't even know where those would come from.
Yeah, well, neither do I, but as soon as I get them, I'll let you know. All right?
Yeah.
So you and I are going to have to stay friends for what looks like 9 years. Now, let me ask you, Frank, let me ask you this. Since the release of your best-selling book, The FBI Way, in early 2021, the FBI has been under increasing public scrutiny while also having to navigate this unprecedented number of violent threats that are coming against agents. And on top of that, the recent Mar-a-Lago search has now only exacerbated these threats. So if you can, and if you know, what's the feeling inside the Bureau? I mean, have these threats served to increase the FBI's resolve to bring Trump to justice? Or do you think maybe it's given them pause because lives are now so clearly on the line?
Yeah, I think this is where Trump and the far right may be miscalculating. I think if they believe, and I don't know, I think they're really just trying to turn the public against institutions and believe that truly there's some true believers who believe that the only answer is to completely dismantle our institutions and start over again. And I disagree strongly with that, I actually respect someone who believes that in their heart, right? I think that's not going on. I think what most of the most vocal people are doing when they threaten the FBI and even the lives of FBI agents and their families, I think they're dangerously deluded and radicalized and don't give a shit about the safety of the people who come to work every day trying to preserve America. So this becomes personal to me. I spent 25 years in that agency. I know the men and women who come to work every day simply trying to get the mission done, took an oath to protect, preserve, and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And now that the enemies are domestic, Michael, now people get very, very, very worried, right? And so let's recap. We've had a guy in Cincinnati, Ohio, who shows up in the reception room at FBI Cincinnati and decides this is the day I'm going to show up with an AR-15 slung over my shoulder, and I'm willing to die in a cornfield in the farm country of remote Ohio because I believe the Mar-a-Lago search was overreach by the FBI. That is called radicalization. The ability to move from ideology to deadly action in a matter of weeks or days is a sign of extreme radicalization. There's a team of people who show up with, again, assault-style rifles and surround FBI Phoenix a couple of weekends ago. You know the first thing I thought of particularly because it was a weekend, how about the woman coming to work her afternoon shift as the radio dispatcher on a Saturday at FBI Phoenix? No badge, no gun. Didn't sign up to risk her life working the radio on an evening shift at the FBI Phoenix, right? She's got to drive through that crowd to get to the security booth and get into the parking lot. Really? Is that where we are? A guy just a couple of days ago gets arrested, FBI Chicago. He jumps the tall security fence, starts throwing rocks at the building. He's a nutcase. But again, are you willing to get shot for a lie, for the deception that's happening here? Yeah, that's where we are. And the threat of his family, some guy running for state senate in Florida actually said if he gets elected, he's going to has a plan to give permission to shoot on site FBI agents.
Yes.
What really? And who's come out on the far right and said, okay, that's enough. That's enough of that. Essentially nobody.
Yeah, which is disgraceful. And you may remember when the FBI raided my home, the hotel, law office, the first thing Trump came out and said is the same nonsense that he said now. They kicked down the doors, you know, they held people at bay, they ransacked the place. And you may remember, because we've had this conversation, I turned around and I said they were courteous, they were respectful, and they were professional. And, you know, the funny thing, too, is even with the unconstitutional remand, a bunch of the agents turned around and said, I just want to say thank you for standing up for us because our job is hard enough. This isn't personal. We were doing what we were told to do, which is to execute on this warrant. But I want to ask you this then, because you're right, we have these radicalized lunatics, and there's no other way to call them. They are lunatics. Are we ready should this MAGAverse go off and try to start something like a civil war? I mean, because Garland has to be aware that Trump's violent supporters will go nuts or would go nuts if Mar-a-Lago was searched. So they must have had, they must have had knowledge of this before that they went in. Or do you believe, in your opinion, was the extreme MAGA reaction to the search underestimated by Garland and maybe the FBI?
I think they had a plan. This is conjecture. But I think they had a plan. But which, by the way, you talk about unprecedented times. DOJ is not accustomed to having to have a PR plan for a search warrant, right? Their typical MO is we've conducted law enforcement action at the corner of Maple and Vine, right? That's it. Okay. Now, for the first time that I can remember, they probably have a team who's going, okay, if Trump does this, after we do this, then we do this. We have to come out. We may have to come out, sir, and have a press conference. We might have to issue a statement. We might have to file this. So they're having to play chess. So far, they're playing chess pretty well. And I think the answer to your question is I think they were watching to see the extent of reaction and acted accordingly. But I have to tell you the concern here. So there's good news, bad news. As bad as the threats have gotten, and yes, some guy died in a cornfield in Ohio, and some guy jumped a fence in Chicago, it hasn't been a call to civil war. There are people on extreme chat rooms who belong to violent groups who are saying, let's go, saddle up, locked and loaded. But you know what? They do that every weekend. They say that every weekend. So, but the concern would be that this would be a sneak preview, what we've seen so far in terms of threat and the far right inability to call it out and stop it. This would be a sneak preview for the day if and when Trump is indicted on something, anything, that the sight of him getting processed, handcuffed or whisked away or showing up at the marshal's office for processing, that really could exacerbate the threat level, no question about it. And I'm also equally, if not even more, concerned about the November midterms and the possibility of violence, particularly in certain key Arizona, Georgia, Florida, the Senate races, the far right planning already to say, doesn't matter if we won, there was corruption in the vote counting or the machines or whatever. They're ready to go. They're ready to go. And I've said repeatedly, they don't have to win in November. They just have to claim that it was a corrupt, non-credible outcome. And we could see violence at the state, county, local level.
You know, Frank, let me go back for a quick second and bring back that Merrick Garland question about whether he's doing enough in order to rehabilitate the reputation of the Department of Justice. And this is just yet another reason why I say he's doing too little. Yes, okay, great. They raided Mar-a-Lago or they executed the warrant. They took documents that we now know he should not have had in 184 docs and all that. There are so many things that they could have and should have already locked this guy's ass up. He should already be, if not in prison, because I understand the difficulty of putting a former president in a federal correctional institution. So let's put him on a home confinement, but a very strict one. This should have already been done. Why? We already know going back 3+ years, at least 3 years, obstruction of justice and witness tampering. We all know it. Let's even go back even further than that. When I testified before the House Oversight Committee and I showed the world that Donald Trump is a tax cheat. Fuck it. Fuck it. They couldn't get Al Capone on what they wanted to get him on, murder, extortion, racketeering. So they got his ass on fucking racketeering. They got him on tax evasion. That's what they got him on. The same shit. Does anybody that's center to left care whether or not it's because he stole documents in violation of the law from, you know, the National Archives, or they get him and put him away for tax evasion, bank fraud, you know, wire fraud, etc. There's so many things that Merrick Garland could have and should have done, but his feeling is, nope, I throw my hands up, you know, I don't want to be political, I don't want, you know, I don't want to be perceived as being political, and he says, everybody describes him, he's slow and methodical. You know what happens with slow and methodical, Frank? You get fucking run over. And that's the problem with Trump, because as fucked up as he is and as stupid as he is as manipulative as he is, and he's running over this country, including now having these documents. Because you're right, we don't know who he gave them to. We don't know who he showed. We don't know whose lives are in danger, whether they're agents, whether it's you, me. It could be, who knows? Who knows?
So, look, I'm not someone who's going to sit here and debate anything you just said, because I do believe our democracy is threatened, and so delay could literally lead to the demise of democracy. However, comma, I understand, based on my years in DOJ, the investigative approach he took. You and I may not agree with it, but it's an established investigative approach, which is you work your way up. Right, you flip people. It's very traditional in drug and organized crime cases. Right, seldom do you get to swoop in and arrest everybody at once—the capo of the family or the head of the cartel, plus all the minions and captains and all of that. Very, very rare. So they took a traditional approach. They also, I'm sure, were extra cautious because of public perception. So they want people to go, hey, look, we're taking the low-hanging fruit. We're approaching 1,000 people. Arrested for their role in January 6th violence, and that needs to get done because, by God, we can't have 1,000 people again at the Capitol, so let's send a message about accountability and consequences to the masses. I get that. The problem that I have, and some have come out and kind of like you, questioned that investigative approach in this regard because of the urgency of the threat, so I can't take credit for this. Andrew Weissman, former general counsel at the FBI, has actually come out and said, you know, that's a nice traditional approach, working your way in a linear fashion, straight up. But there's also another approach, which is hub and spoke, which is, come at it from all angles and do everything at once, all hands on deck. Why do you have to do everything, you know, the January 6th people first? And so there could be another approach. The problem, back to PR, is, and I know I hate the word optics. I hate when people tell me, Frank, the optics are bad to this. In my career, I really couldn't care less about the optics, but I get it that if you go too fast, right, if they came out yesterday and went, yep, we're taking down Trump for the state's false slate of electors, for ginning up the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers on January, and for the fake documents, we're done. We got it all done. Most of the public would go, God, Jesus, that was really fast. The grand juries are all done. You interviewed everybody. Really? So it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. I do agree with you that, like the Al Capone thing, if you have a threat, the threat has to be neutralized. And if it's neutralized on tax fraud,
who cares?
Or documents, it really doesn't matter.
And I'm sure that was a little long, but everybody, we are in a deeply, deeply troubling situation with this man as Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen wants to get him so bad because what he did to him, I understand that. And not that I'm not in agreement with that, but you got to get, you're going to kill the king, lock the king up. You better get him on every single thing where he can't even talk. And I was looking for the, and I just found it, the last month of a 24. Because if you looked at the last, if you remember 24 when it was on, great show. The president was involved in some shenanigans like this. But with China. That's who it was. He was with China. And he had to give up his whole career and almost life to make sure that he got this man and turned the man over to the authorities. Because the president was involved up to his eyeballs and everything. Now, before we go, I wanted to play one more thing. It's not that long, but there are so many things talking about it, and which I didn't have the right people to come on here I wanted to talk with. That's why I didn't have them come on. That's why I played this long piece. Because the people I wanted to come on, I couldn't get now. We're going to get them in the next couple of weeks. And I can remind you again about we're going to YouTube very shortly. The show is going to be moved. And we'll have more shows. We'll have shows on probably almost every day. So it'll be a different format and everything. You'll probably see me live on the on your computer. Not as it starts, but as soon as it starts. But I'll let you know when our first show is. We're going to keep this format until we get that running correctly. And then we'll be off Blog Talk Radio and be exclusively on YouTube. But I want everybody to hear what the president said. They're talking about, oh, he shouldn't have talked to the people like this. Oh, he shouldn't have said that, because he's claiming everybody's everybody in the Republican Party wanted to overthrow the government. It was all bad. No, the president did not say that. The president did not say that all Republicans were criminals. The president said that if you were involved with the extreme fools, the Make America Great Again fools, that you are probably up to your eyeballs in this. And he's only talking about the MAGA people. That's all. And listen to the words in his speech. He did not say all Republicans. He said MAGA Republicans. That means the people who now have thrown their lot in with the clown prince, Trump, the red man, the orange man who was formerly in the White House. So I want you to listen to this speech. I think it was one of the best speeches he has ever given. Anybody's ever given, in that matter. Just listen.
fellow Americans, please, if you have a seat, take it. I speak to you tonight from sacred ground in America, Independence Hall in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This is where America made its Declaration of Independence to the world more than two centuries ago with an idea unique among nations. That in America, we're all created equal. This is where the United States Constitution was written and debated. This is where we set in motion the most extraordinary experiment of self-government the world has ever known. With three simple words, we the people, we the people. These two documents and the ideas they embody, equality and democracy, are the rock upon which this nation is built. They are how we became the greatest nation on earth. They are why, for more than two centuries, America has been a beacon to the world. But as I stand here tonight, equality and democracy are under assault. We do ourselves no favor to pretend otherwise. So tonight, I've come to this place where it all began to speak as plainly as I can to the nation about the threats we face, about the power we have in our own hands to meet these threats, and about the incredible future that lies in front of us if only we choose it. We must never forget, we the people are the true heirs of the American experiment that began more than two centuries ago. We the people have burning inside of each of us the flame of liberty that was lit here at Independence Hall. A flame that lit our way through abolition, the Civil War, suffrage, the Great Depression, world wars, civil rights. That sacred flame still burns. Now in our time, as we build an America that is more prosperous, free, and just, that is the work of my presidency, a mission I believe in with my whole soul. But first, we must be honest with each other and with ourselves. Too much of what's happening in our country today is not normal. Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic. Now, I want to be very clear up front. Not every Republican, not even the majority of Republicans are MAGA Republicans. Not every Republican embraces their extreme ideology. I know, because I've been able to work with these mainstream Republicans. But there's no question that the Republican Party today is dominated, driven, and intimidated by Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans. And that is a threat to this country. These are hard things, but I'm an American president, not a president of red America, blue America, but of all America. And I believe it's my duty to level with you, to tell the truth, no matter how difficult, no matter how painful. And here, in my view, is what is true. MAGA Republicans do not respect the Constitution. They do not believe in the rule of law. They do not recognize the will of the people. They refuse to accept the results of a free election. And they're working right now, as I speak, in state after state, to give power to decide elections in America to partisans and cronies, empowering election deniers to undermine democracy itself. MAGA forces are determined to take this country backwards. Backwards to an America where there is no right to choose, no right to privacy, no right to contraception, no right to marry who you love,
They promote authoritarian leaders, and they fan the flames of political violence that are a threat to our personal rights, to the pursuit of justice, to the rule of law, to the very soul of this country. They look at the mob that stormed the United States Capitol on January 6th, brutally attacking law enforcement, not as insurrectionists who placed a dagger at the throat of our democracy, but they look at them as patriots, and they see their MAGA failure to stop a peaceful transfer of power after the 2020 election as preparation for the 2022 and 2024 elections. They tried everything last time to nullify the votes of 81 million people. This time, they're determined to succeed in thwarting the will of the people. That's why respected conservatives like Federal Circuit Court Judge Michael Ludwig has called Trump and the extreme MAGA Republicans, quote, a clear and present danger to our democracy. But while the threat to American democracy is real, I want to say as clearly as we can, we are not powerless in the face of these threats. We are not bystanders in this ongoing attack on democracy. There are far more Americans from every background and belief who reject the extreme MAGA ideology than those that accept it. And folks, it's within our power, it's in our hands, yours and mine, to stop the assault on American democracy. I believe America is at an inflection point, one of those moments that determine the shape of everything that's to come after. And now, America must choose to move forward or to move backwards, to build a future or obsess about the past, to be a nation of hope and unity and optimism, or a nation of fear, division, and of darkness. MAGA Republicans have made their choice. They embrace anger. They thrive on chaos. They live not in the light of truth, but in the shadow of lies. But together we can choose a different path. We can choose a better path forward to the future. A future of possibility, a future to build and dream and hope. And we're on that path moving ahead. I know this nation. I know you, the American people. I know your courage. I know your hearts, and I know our history. This is a nation that honors our Constitution. We do not reject it. This is a nation that believes in the rule of law. We do not repudiate it. This is a nation that respects free and fair elections. We honor the will of the people. We do not deny it. And this is a nation that rejects violence as a political tool. We do not encourage violence. We are still an America that believes in honesty and decency and respect for others. Patriotism, liberty, justice for all, hope, possibilities. We are still, at our core, a democracy. And yet, history tells us the blind loyalty to a single leader and a willingness to engage in political violence is fatal to democracy. For a long time, we told ourselves that American democracy is guaranteed, but it's not. We have to defend it, protect it, stand up for it, each and every one of us. That's why tonight, I'm asking our nation to come together, unite behind the single purpose of defending our democracy regardless of your ideology. We're all called by duty and conscience to confront extremists who put their own pursuit of power above all else. Democrats, independents, mainstream Republicans, We must be stronger, more determined, and more committed to saving American democracy than MAGA Republicans are to destroying American democracy. We, the people, will not let anyone or anything tear us apart. Today, there are dangers around us we cannot allow to prevail. We hear, you've heard it, more and more talk about violence as an acceptable political tool in this country. It's not. It can never be an acceptable tool. So I want to say this plain and simple. There is no place for political violence in America, period. None, ever. We saw law enforcement brutally attacked on January 6th. We've seen election officials, poll workers, many of them volunteers of both parties, subject to intimidation and death threats. And can you believe it? FBI agents just doing their job as directed, facing threats to their own lives from their own fellow citizens. On top of that, there are public figures today, yesterday, and the day before predicting and all but calling for mass violence and rioting in the streets. This is inflammatory. It's dangerous. It's against the rule of law. And we, the people, must say, this is not who we are. Ladies and gentlemen, we can't be pro-insurrectionists and pro-American. They're incompatible. We can't allow violence to be normalized in this country. It's wrong. We each have to reject political violence with all the moral clarity and conviction this nation can muster. Now, we can't let the integrity of our elections be undermined, for that is a path to chaos. Look, I know politics can be fierce and mean and nasty in America. I get it. I believe in the give and take of politics, in disagreement and debate and dissent. We're a big, complicated country. But democracy endures only if we, the people, respect the guardrails of the republic. Only if we, the people, accept the results of free and fair elections. Only if we, the people, see politics not as total war, but mediation of our differences. Democracy cannot survive when one side believes there are only two outcomes to an election. Either they win or they were cheated. And that's where the MAGA Republicans are today. They don't understand what every patriotic American knows. You can't love your country only when you win. It's fundamental. American democracy only works only if we choose to respect the rule of law and the institutions that were set up in this chamber behind me. Only if we respect our legitimate political differences. I will not stand by and watch. I will not. The will of the American people be overturned by wild conspiracy theories and baseless evidence-free claims of fraud. I will not stand by and watch elections in this country stolen by people who simply refuse to accept that they lost. I will not stand by and watch the most fundamental freedom in this country, the freedom to vote, and have your vote counted and be taken from you and the American people. Look, as your president, I will defend our democracy with every fiber of my being, and I'm asking every American to join me. Throughout our history, America's often made the greatest progress coming out of some of our darkest moments, like you're hearing that bullhorn. I believe we can and must do that again. And we are. MAGA Republicans look at America and see carnage and darkness and despair. They spread fear and lies, lies told for profit and power. But I see a different America. An America with an unlimited future. An America that's about to take off. I hope you see it as well. Just look around. I believe we could lift America from the depths of COVID. So we passed the largest economic recovery package since Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And today, America's economy is faster, stronger than any other advanced nation in the world. We have more to go. I believe we could build a better America. So we passed the biggest infrastructure investment since President Dwight D. Eisenhower. And we've now embarked on a decade of rebuilding the nation's roads, bridges, highways, ports, water systems, high-speed internet, railroads. I believe we could make America safer. So we passed the most significant gun safety law since President Clinton. I believe we could go from being the highest cost of prescriptions in the world to making prescription drugs and health care more affordable. So we passed the most significant health care reform since President Obama signed the Affordable Care Act. And I believe we could create a clean energy future and save the planet. So we passed the most important climate initiative ever, ever, ever. The cynics and the critics tell us nothing can get done, but they're wrong. There is not a single thing America cannot do, not a single thing beyond our capacity if we do it together. It's never easy, but we're proving in America, no matter how long the road, progress does come. Look. I know the last year, a few years have been tough, but today, COVID no longer controls our lives. More Americans are working than ever. Businesses are growing. Our schools are open. Millions of Americans have been lifted out of poverty. Millions of veterans once exposed to toxic burn pits will now get what they deserve for their families and the compensation. American manufacturers come alive across the heartland, and the future will be made in America. No matter what the white supremacists and the extremists say, I made a bet on you, the American people, and that bet is paying off, proving that from darkness, the darkness of Charlottesville, of COVID, of gun violence, of insurrection, we can see the light. Light is now visible. Light that will guide us forward, not only in words, but in actions. Actions for you, for your children, for your grandchildren, for America. Even in this moment, with all the challenges we face, I give you my word as a Biden, I've never been more optimistic about America's future. Not because of me, but because of who you are. We're going to end cancer as we know it. Mark my words. We're going to create millions of new jobs in a clean energy economy. We're going to think big. We're going to make the 21st century another American century. Because the world needs us to. That's where we need to focus our energy. Not in the past. Not on divisive culture wars. Not on the politics of grievance. But on a future we can build together. The MAGA Republicans believe that for them to succeed, everyone else has to fail. They believe America... not like I believe about America. I believe America is big enough for all of us to succeed. And that is the nation we're building, the nation where no one is left behind. I ran for president because I believe we're in a battle for the soul of this nation. I still believe that to be true. I believe the soul is the breath, the life, and the essence of who we are. The soul is what makes us us. The soul of America is defined by the sacred proposition that all are created equal in the image of God, that all are entitled to be treated with decency, dignity, and respect, that all deserve justice and a shot at lives of prosperity and consequence, and that democracy must be defended, for democracy makes all these things possible. Folks, and it's up to us. Democracy begins and will be preserved in we, the people's habits of the heart, in our character, optimism that is tested yet endures, courage that digs deep when we need it, empathy that fuels democracy, the willingness to see each other not as enemies but as fellow Americans. Look, our democracy isn't perfect. It always has been. Notwithstanding those folks you hear on the other side there, they're entitled to be outrageous. This is a democracy. But history and common sense. Good manners is nothing they've ever suffered from. But history and common sense tell us that opportunity, liberty, and justice for all are most likely to come to pass in a democracy. We have never fully realized the aspirations of our founding, but every generation has opened those doors a little bit wider to include more people who have been excluded before. My fellow Americans, America is an idea, the most powerful idea in the history of the world, and it beats in the hearts of the people of this country. It beats in all our hearts. It unites America. It is the American creed. The idea that America guarantees that everyone be treated with dignity. It gives hate no safe harbor. It installs in everyone the belief that no matter where you start in life, there's nothing you can't achieve. That's who we are. That's what we stand for. That's what we believe. And that's precisely what we're doing. Opening doors. Creating possibilities. Focusing on the future. And we're only just beginning. Our task is to make our nation free and fair, just and strong, noble and whole. And this work is the work of democracy, the work of this generation. It is the work of our time, for all time. We can't afford to leave anyone on the sidelines. We need everyone to do their part. So speak up, speak out, get engaged, vote, vote, vote. And if we do our duty in 2022 and beyond, then ages still to come will say, we, all of us here, we kept the faith. We preserved democracy. We heeded not our worst instincts, but our better angels. We proved that for all its imperfections, America is still the beacon to the world. An ideal to be realized, a promise to be kept. There's nothing more important, nothing more sacred, nothing more American. That's our soul. That's who we truly are. And that's who we must always be. I have no doubt, none, that this is who we will be. And that we'll come together as a nation that will secure our democracy. That for the next 200 years, we'll have what we had the past 200 years, the greatest nation on the face of the earth. We just need to remember who we are. We are the United States of America, the United States of America. And may God protect our nation, and may God protect all those who stand watch over our democracy. God bless you all. Democracy. Thank you.
Including his speech in about 25 minutes there. Really striking image, all of it, really, the sort of scenery. Of course, the American flag behind him, the red lights, the Marines standing guard, the heckler yelling from a bullhorn, the police sirens, although the president at one point pointing to the heckler and saying, yeah, that's what democracy is all about. Of course they have a right to go and yell into the street. It was the most pointed language about the faction of American politics devoted to both the ex-president and his authoritarian vision of rule or ruin that has been offered by Joe Biden in the time that he has been either a candidate or the president. He talked about the guardrails of the Constitution, about MAGA Republicans not believing in the Constitution, that they had a vision that either they won or they were cheated, that for them to succeed, everyone else would have to fail. He talked about a kind of coalition of those of goodwill coming together to unite to defend democracy and the soul of America. For some reaction, I want to turn to someone whose job was to monitor the nation's national security, one among many jobs he's held. Shortly after 9/11, of course, we created...
And that was the end of his speech, and it was a very, very, very important speech. And he ignored, he spoke to that person that was, or he mentioned him, with the bullhorn and the police siren out there, saying that's what democracy is all about. Trump would have had him locked up even though he wasn't on the property, because no one does that to him while he's talking, because he is God. He is God, as he says. That's right. Yes, he is God. Yes, he is. Well, what we're going to hear from now on is that, well, people don't want him to be there. I don't understand it. But that's the way it is. So I have to go and leave a few minutes early today because I got to pick up my wife's car. And I want everybody to have a great weekend. Have a great holiday. Labor Day. It was warm where you are. It's not flooded. Have the barbecue if you can. And have a good drink. Because as Sarah Palin says, when she lost, I'm going to reload. Well, we'll see if she reloads, all right. Everybody have a great weekend. Thank you. And remember, we have to prevent him from getting in again. Yes. Yes. Okay, everybody. Have a great weekend. Bye.